Hello, everybody. I'm Justin Long, host of Straight from the Horse Doctor's Mouth, and I want to talk to you about something every horse owner dreads: emergencies. In these moments, indecision makes it hard to know what to do or if you should call your vet. That's why Dr. Latcher and I created the Equine Emergency Vet Care Guide. This is an app that walks you step by step through common equine emergencies, helps you decide when to call, and tells you exactly what information your veterinarian needs. It's not a replacement for your vet. It helps you work with them towards the best outcome for your horse. Search Equine Emergency App in the App Store or Google Play and be prepared before the emergency happens.
You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Greetings, everyone. Coach Jen here, and thanks for tuning in to Horse Tip Daily, episode 1625. This time we get to be a fly on the wall as Horses in the Morning co-host Glenn and Jamie chat with Dr. Marcello from the University of Florida about yeast infections in horses.
I would like to welcome to the show Dr. Rosanna Marsala, and she is the veterinary dermatologist and full professor at the University of Florida. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Now, Glenn and I have covered for 15 years horse health topics, and I really think this might be the first time that we've covered this. And I also think it's the first time I've heard this word. And I've been involved in horses for a long time, and you taught me how to pronounce it, and it's called Malassezia.
Malassezia, yes.
What is that?
Well, it's a name for a yeast that we see in allergic individuals. I mean, people get it, horses get it, dogs get it. And it's just an overgrowth on the skin whenever the skin is moist and irritated. For example, in horses, the most common scenario is when horses have a fly mask for too long and they sweat underneath, they are prone to get a yeast infection. So, and it's most of the time is Malassezia.
Okay. So the yeast infection, because I mean, as a woman, all of us know what that means in human world, unfortunately. So, in horses, it's not that area. It can be pretty much, I guess, anywhere on the skin.
Yeah. So in people, the most common scenario is that you are on antibiotics and that kind of alters your flora. And so you have an overgrowth of candida. But in horses, that has nothing to do with an antibiotic course. It has everything to do with an imbalance of the flora of the skin. And it's frequently both bacteria and yeast that rather than being competitive with each other, they are what we call symbiotic. So they help each other. So many times they go hand in hand. And sometimes, you know, people are concerned that this is the result of an antibiotic course, but it's not. It's just it's an indication that the skin is inflamed and it stayed moist for extended periods of time. So a lot of sweat, you know, a common area is under the forelock, you know, that they sweat a lot. And then if people forget about the, you know, and it rains and or they just simply sweat underneath, that's what they tend to get. And there is very itchy and it looks like little areas of loss of pigment. So the skin kind of loses its pigment and it can look like pink or just discolored. Yeah.
So they might lose their hair. I was going to ask you next, what does it look like? So it looks like a pink area is there hair loss associated with it?
Yes. Many times there is hair loss and as well as itching.
God, this is what my pony had, Dr. Marcella, a really bad case. It's getting better now, but over the last month and all across the top line, you know, between the legs and the back.
Ooze?
It looks raw. It just looks raw. And it did lose his hair in those spots, but it was pink and looked raw and itchy as all get out. Poor boy.
So the inguinal area is another common area. You know, so anywhere there is a fold or it's just simply stays moist, the skin needs to stay dry. You know, so when there is a prolonged moisture, then these infections are very common. It is unusual to have yeast alone. Most of the times are in combination bacteria and yeast. And then it creates this snowball effect because the animal is itchy. So the more they traumatize their skin, the more they impair the skin barrier function. Therefore, it's easier for all these organisms to take over. And actually, if I am able to add this piece of information, secondary skin infections are the most common cause of treatment failure when people try to treat allergic horses. So like horses that, you know, maybe used to respond, let's say, to steroids, and then they become completely unmanageable and very itchy. It's typically because they have developed a secondary infection on top of their allergy.
Oh, that sucks. Gosh, as a horse, that sucks. As a horse owner, it really sucks because you're trying everything you can. So what do you do?
Yes. So what are the options? So one is chlorhexidine. So chlorhexidine is easy in many different products, anything between 2 and 4% chlorhexidine, which people can order online. They don't need
the
a
blue
prescription.
Stuff.
Yeah, so it basically will kill both the bacteria and the yeast. For animals that have become allergic to chlorhexidine, because sometimes that is the case, those are the ones that turn, you know, very flaky after the bath, then an alternative, it would be a silver shampoo. There is a product, a silver honey shampoo, as well as an antifungal shampoo. So the classic would be Nizoral. Nizoral is a human product, but is available over the counter. It's ketoconazole shampoo, and people can mix their shampoos, you know, if you have a mixed infection, and that is the best way to provide relief.
Oh my gosh, just things to just freak you out every day.
It was so awful, funny. Jamie. This particular thing with the pony was it was 2 months of battle, you know, with the vet out and the whole thing, and it was awful. And Jennifer did blame the bugs a bit. She thought that the bugs had something to do with it. That could that be true or not?
Yes, and like I said, many horses have an underlying insect allergy, like nociums or you know, different types of bugs. So they start with that and then they progress into an infection. And so the way to deal with this is, one, use a good repellent. And I could spend hours talking about that, but use a good repellent on a daily basis to minimize new bites. And then address the secondary infection. Now, sometimes people think it's only bacteria, so that they put the animal, for example, on TMS, right? The sulfonamide, and they don't get better because they also have a yeast infection, right? So when you use an antibiotic, you're killing the bacteria, but you're not doing anything for the yeast. So that is something to keep in mind. Many times these two types of infections go together. But yeast are the itchiest ones, you know, so there's something specific about yeast that makes the type of itch unresponsive to steroids and particularly intense.
It's not any fun either. As a human, I had Lyme disease early in the days of Lyme disease when they didn't know how to treat it at all. And I was on antibiotics off and on for a year, and yeast infections were the most common thing, even with humans, with that dosage of antibiotics over a long time.
Oh, yeah. And you're not even a girl. So no. You mentioned good repellent, and you said you could talk forever about that. Can you please tell me what the magic fly spray is this year? I swear.
Okay, so there is a lot of confusion, and unfortunately, there are not good laws to regulate what people can say on the label. So I see this all the time with horse owners are very frustrated because they think that they're doing everything possible. But there are some products that claim to have repellent activity when they don't. So I encourage people to always look at the label. So let's start with this. Pyrethrin is not a repellent, it's an insecticide. So it means that if you spray a fly that is already on the horse, it will drop dead, but it will not prevent the fly from landing on the horse. So if I have a horse that is allergic, then I want a repellent. So you need to have permethrin. And some products have very low percentage of permethrin. So it's very important to look at the label. You want to have at least like 0.5% permethrin in order to be a repellent. Or you can use a permethrin derivative like cypermethrin, in which case you can use a lower percentage. I mean, I can give commercial names, but I don't want to, you know, in case this is not allowed. But those are the ingredients for horses that become, quote, allergic to those types of chemicals. You can go botanical. And so in that group, the most effective is neem oil. Neem oil. And has to be 1%. There are some products for horses that are ready to use so that people don't have to do any dilution. If people buy the concentrated neem oil, they need to dilute it. Now, other options like garlic, you know, garlic is not a good repellent for bugs. And citronella is very short-lived. Avoskin So Soft is very short-lived. So all this, you know, all these things basically will last a very short amount of time. So the longest acting products are either a permethrin derivative or neem oil.
Oh my gosh, I've taken so many notes while we're on the phone. Okay, so we've got the pyrethrin is not good. It's an insecticide, which I don't really want to spray on my horse or get all over me. So it will kill the bugs dead. So that spray your floors and tack room with. But permethrin or cypropermethrin would be the ones that would be a repellent. Now, if you want to, I'm just repeating what you said. So I make sure I got it all straight. Neem oil, 1%, dilute it. And we all know that there's, you know, I think Equiderma is the neem oil spray. And okay. I do have some of that. And then there's that yellow bottle, I think it's called Piranha. Is that permethrin or pyrethrin?
It's a combination, low percentage, pyrethrin and permethrin. So most of these products also have some pyrethrin in it. So you cannot avoid not spraying your horse with it because they have the pyrethrin. But I encourage people to look at the label. So many of these products, when you actually look at the label, they have a very low percentage. So they are okay for the average horse, but they're not okay for the nauseam allergic horse. So the nauseam allergic horse needs to see permethrin and a higher percentage of permethrin. There are some, for example, topical that you can apply on the pole area that have larger percentage of permethrin, like Equispot, for example.
I was going to ask you if they work.
They work for this selected areas, right? So, for example, nauseams like to, the different species of nauseam, some would like to feed on the face. Of course, people don't spray the face of a horse, so then you are left having to decide whether you use a fly mask or you use a topical repellent. The fly mask, like I said, that if you are in an area that is hot and humid, and I speak out of experience, I am in Florida. So fly masks, when it's like 97 degrees, 99% humidity, is typically not a good idea. So you use the topical permethrin spot on the pole area. And then you spray the rest of the body. But because of the humidity and the sweating, these products need to be applied every day or, you know, sometimes even twice a day. depending, you know, if you had a downpour in the afternoon and stuff like that. So it goes against what it says on the label of many of these products, where they quote say it kills and repels for up to 14 days.
Yeah, that was that's all garbage. We all
right. So I'm not sure where they did the study, but I can promise you that if you're in an area where the bugs are an issue, that is so not going to be true. So people need to basically be brave and apply generous amounts of these products on a daily basis on their horses.
Okay, I have just found a super discovery. Okay, are you ready for this? So I love the Equiderma products, and my senior gelding, he's 33, and his belly, like the ventral midline of his belly, always is so itchy because of the bugs getting under there. So I learned that I have this Equiderma wound ointment, and I've always put on wounds, and it repels the flies. So now I just take this Equiderma wound ointment, and I just get a big thing, and I just go underneath his belly, right? I don't know. I didn't know why it worked. I just looked it up. It's made out of calendula and neem wound ointment. Oh my God, I know now.
Yes. So the ventral midline dermatitis, which is what you're describing, is caused by fly bites. So that is a classic area, you know, so putting a repellent in that area. So you were on the right track, maybe not even knowing why this was working. But yes, that's what you want to do. You want to make sure that there are some preferred feeding sites where you need a good amount of repellent to avoid an issue.
I keep it in my I have like a tiny little barn fridge, and I keep the wound ointment in the fridge. So when I scoop it out every morning, I put it on his belly, you know, and he just loves it. I scratch it in there, and it's like his favorite thing in the world. And now I just thought I was like, I had some sort of magic trick that nobody knew about. And it just turns out it's just the neem oil in there, because I noticed it when you put that on wounds, the flies stay away, and it's better than SWAT and all that stuff too. And it's natural and it's great. Oh my God. Okay. Well, here you go. Here's a commercial for Equiderma. We didn't even mean to have it. Sorry.
Well,
but this is important, right? The wounds. I mean, if I may add one thing quickly. So any open area where the flies can land, it will lead potentially to summer sores, right? So, and yeah, so it's very important, any area that is a wound, to be covered or to use generous amount of repellents to avoid turning that little scratch into a chronic summer sore.
Oh my gosh, you are so fascinating to talk to. I could talk to you forever about all of this, but I did want to touch the topic that I found out that you actually, speaking of our last guest, you actually own Andalusians too. We're like best friends already, I can tell.
Yes. I mean, Andalusians become an addiction, right? So at least that's in my experience, yeah. I started with them over 20 years ago, and now I have quite a few at the house. And there is, once you have an Andalusian, I think it will be very hard to be satisfied with another breed. And I mean this with, you know, respect toward other breeds, but there is something very unique about the Andalusians.
Well, we were talking before we started about the fact that they kind of pick one person, and I 100% feel that. I've had an exchange student live with us the past year, and she rode him all year and had so many different issues with, like, he wouldn't stand at the mounting block, he wouldn't do this, and now he's back to me because she's gone. And I mean, he came to the mounting block today. He's like, he walks up to me and just puts his head down by my knees so I'll scratch his ear. I'm like, oh my God, I forgot you love me so much.
Yeah, once they bond, they will do anything for you, and that's how they are. They tend to have a preferential bond. They don't do well when they are passed around. They get their feelings hurt, you know, so you know, you have to be very sensitive and in tune with their emotions, and once you have that bond, you can absolutely do anything with them. So it's a very, it's almost like a huge dog. You know, so that's the way.
Yeah. So here I'm going to ask you a personal question. How many do you have?
I have 16 on the illusion.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
That is an addiction. Yes. I just had a baby last month. So yeah, 16. And I promise it's my last baby. Yes.
Sure.
Yeah, we believe you.
Well, this has been so fascinating, Dr. Marcella. If people have any questions, where can they go to maybe ask you whatever they want to know?
I would encourage them to shoot me an email. My email is my last name, so Marcella at UFL, like University of Florida, .edu, like education. And I'll be happy to help. I mean, I am a vet. I'm an equine dermatologist, but I'm a horse owner, and I am always happy to help.
For first-time horse owners and new riders, finding the information and support you need can be challenging. That's why Equine Network has partnered with Sentinel and Absorbine to bring you My New Horse. From important horsekeeping information and how-to videos to social media communities, exclusive experiences, and more, My New Horse is your one-stop shop for riders of all levels and disciplines looking for easy-to-understand horse care information and guidance. Start your horse ownership journey today. Visit mynewhorse.com.
Well, there you have it. Horse Radio Network has thousands of engaging podcasts for horse people, and you can have them sent right to your phone. Just subscribe via your favorite podcast player. This is Coach Jen, and I will be back again soon with another tip. Until then, go ride your horse. The Horse Radio Network and the Horse Radio Network hosts are not responsible for statements made by guests on the Horse Tip Daily. Please use your own judgment when listening to the tips on this show.